You are listening to The Business Wilderness, the voice of entrepreneurs. Welcome to The Business Wilderness. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli, and today I have a very special guest with me, Mr. Jason Morrell. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Well, it was good to run into you last week, and it was good that you have an interest in cybersecurity, so that's always a good tick off.
I think the whole world should have an interest in cybersecurity nowadays.
Yeah.
Things are going to get interesting.
Yeah.
But quickly, let's go back in time. Where did it all begin for you, Jason?
For me, personally, or with the cyber business?
Yourself.
Oh, okay. That could be a long story and probably take up too much time.
take your time.
I've always been, since 23, involved in starting up businesses. So, whether that's been listing on exchanges or privately funding businesses. So, and it's been across a wide industry sector. So I think in the early 2000s, it really started out with sort of green technologies. And a gold business I started in the early 2000s, didn't list till 2010, 2011, but that was, it started off as a gold remediation type business, but at that time, gold was only about $300, and it didn't make money until gold was worth at least $700. And then, after the GFC and everything, it got up, to sort of $1,500 US marks.
Wow.
So it made that business viable, and, we were able to acquire a lot of mines and list that one. But because of all that, the green technology sort of fell into the background. It just became a pure gold mining play. I was involved in the startup as a founding shareholder in Starwood Whiskey, which is a local business down in Port Melbourne here. So single malt whiskey made in Australia. Almost 3 years ago, I think Diageo, who are one of the largest distillers in the world, who have like Smirnoff and Johnny Walker and those sort of labels, bought in about 70% through Distill Ventures, one of their funding arms there. And so that's going pretty well. Well, that was more of a fun one than gold. I mean, gold is nice, but whiskey's nicer.
So when you say listed, you mean you listed on the stock exchange?
Yeah, so yeah. With the gold business, that was on the ASX.
Yeah.
The obviously, Diageo, that's still just off the market, so as in they've just invested directly into the business there because they were looking to expand their brands. With Johnny Walker, that's a blended whiskey, but whiskey is year on year is about 30 or 40% growth for single malt whiskies. And Australia's become quite popular because, especially down in Tasmania, they've won a few awards, World Whiskey Awards and things of that nature. And so the focus came onto Australia and what are they doing differently, and that's that sort of market grew from there. So as we were talking about before we sort of started here, I think, with regard to businesses, it's the timing which is everything. And any business I haven't done well in, as we said before, it could be a great business, but just the wrong timing. With the cybersecurity, getting back to that, I think it's perfect timing. The product we've developed is, and this is outside of myself, but for people who use it in the market have found it to be very useful, and easy to understand. So, and I think that's the key thing is having cybersecurity is for a lot of people a scary area. They know they should do something about it. They don't know where to start. And that was our groundwork from where we started. So Jonathan Horn, the CEO, and myself, really the whole time we've been creating it was, how do we make cybersecurity easy so a layperson can get it and really paint by numbers? And the way we've done that business is really taken it from an audit that we can ask, a series of questions, around about 60 questions of a business, the business owner or someone who should be looking after that in the company, and find out where they're most vulnerable, where they're most exposed. So there's sort of 14 or 15 areas then that they can go through, whether it's email security, the network, anything, and then they can click on those sections and open it up, and it will give them a step-by-step guide on how to actually repair the situation. So even down to the point where we've given them emails that they can send if they're not that technical to their either internal or external IT person and say, we're going to change our router as an example. Can you make sure these are the settings? And they can send that off so they don't have to think about the technical aspects. But as they complete it, they can tick off the questions which relate to that audit. And it'll reduce their score. So 100 being a worst case scenario. A lot of businesses we see who are doing the audits end up around about the 75 to 65% as in high risk. Within sort of 3 to 6 months, we try and get that down below 20 and into single digits if they stick with doing the program. And from there, it's basically keeping that awareness up. So we do things like phishing simulations, which is, you know, sending emails to the staff to make sure that, you know, they're clicking on one of our ones, but it's to get that awareness up there. You know, and we hope that people go and tell the rest of the office, hey, I got one of those emails. You know, it's about informing people and letting people know that they're, you know, under attack, either from a phishing attack or a spear phishing attack, where they go direct and lower it that way. You know, so that's one example of doing it. But we keep the videos really short. So the staff are only asking to spend 3 or 4 minutes a month to watch a video and just keep that awareness up. The phishing simulations usually go out once a month at varying times. And that could be a Dropbox link. The one we've used a bit is staff bonuses, you know, Dropbox file. You know, curiosity kills the cat and sometimes kills a business. And, oh, I wonder what people are making here. Click, you know. Yeah. And the click-through rate can be pretty high. So usually in the industry, they say if you get a 30% click rate on your first one, that's a pretty high number. With some of the ones we've been sending out, unfortunately, we've been finding it to be a lot higher. You know, sometimes 60-70% click through rate on opens, you know. Wow. So yeah, and that is concerning, because that's the easiest way. Again, as we spoke about before, you know, 90% of attacks that happen, or cyber attacks, happen due to a phishing attack that way. So you can have the best firewalls, the best routers, you know, all the software in place. But if someone is getting an email through to a system directly to someone and they click on that email, that's how we found most of the attacks occurring in our own experience.
In layman terms,
yep.
What is a phishing attack?
Yeah, so phishing with a PH, is an attack where a cyber criminal will basically use an email that'll either pass off in some forms, they'll make it look like it comes from the CEO. Otherwise, it'll look like it comes from Dropbox, Facebook, Google, and or Microsoft. Just say it might say a Microsoft Office email, and they'll use the same headers and everything like that. As an example, this one happened last year to a firm in the Gold Coast, a law firm, and the email just simply said, you're over quota on your Outlook 365,
mm-hmm.
Log in here and just go and clear it out. So the lady clicked on the link, she went through to a page which looked like the Microsoft Office page, and she typed in her credentials, obviously her email address and the password, which shows the stars. But obviously the criminal on the back end has got full visual of all that, and so they've never captured her details. So what happened from there is the cyber criminals then logged into her account, and they kept an eye on her inbox and outbox just to see what sort of activity she was doing. Now in this law firm, this lady looked after the section which was to deal with property settlements. And wow. So she sent out, so they watched it for about 3 weeks from what we could gather. This, they hadn't used our system. This is something we found out, you know, subsequent, and why they'd sort of come to us. But what had happened is she'd been watched for about three weeks. And they noticed that on just like Thursday or Friday, I can't recall exactly, but back into the week, she would send out property settlements. There was 3 properties settling. Total amount of funds was $780,000. So what happened is they stopped the emails in the outbox when she went to send them. They changed the banking details to their details, and so these notices went out to settle these properties. The funds obviously then get transferred to the criminal's account.
Oh.
And so, I mean, she was, you know, making calls early next week saying, oh, I sent the email to you about the settlement, we haven't received the funds yet. And oh no, we transferred as per the instructions on there. Wasn't until the middle of the next week that they're thinking something's gone wrong here, and contacted the bank and said, have these funds? No, haven't got it. Went back, had a look at the email, noticed that it had been changed, but too late. The criminals have basically set up the account, extracted the money out, and closed the account down. It all happened within the space of a week, that $780,000 completely gone. So it's not just that money's gone, but there's 3 property settlements fell over due to it. You know, we've also heard that staff member was obviously very stressed about doing it, but you know, it does come down to training, and what we try and do is to train people to look for that. So she should have, you know, now she knows, hover her mouse over the link and see what that link says, you know, is it a legitimate link, you know. So there was things that she could be trained to do. And so she took it upon herself, and she was actually quite distressed about it. But, you know, it's the business responsibility to make sure your staff are trained. You know, we, mm-hmm. we all do these fire drills where we, you know, what's the likelihood of having a fire in your building? You know, it's like, but a cyber attack is constant, and it's all the time. And you know, we do these fire drills, and not to say that if you didn't have a fire, it would be good to know what you have to do. Most people just run with their hands up in the air screaming, running for the nearest stairs or lifts still, you know. So but with this can actually make a big difference to a business. I mean, $780,000, they're only a firm of 10 people. That's you know, they're only having a percentage of that, but what effect reputationally does they have in the business? The stat that you see bandied around a fair bit is that within 6 months of a cyber attack, most businesses go out of business. So, and that can be financial, but also reputational as well, you know.
Oh,
so,
I mean, especially law firm.
Yeah, you know, imagine we're a law firm, you know, looks over. And there was another article I read today, the legal fraternity, along with medical, have a lot of personal details about people. If someone got access to those records in the wrong hands, what could they do from an even blackmailing point of view? And the other thing is, once it's been taken, you don't know how long that person is going to wait until they use the information. So, you know, they might sit on it for, so you're always in the back of your mind, it could be 3 months, 6 months, 3 years, 5 years down the track, but they've got a hold of the information, they decide to use it at that time, you know. So it can be something that, you know, you don't know when that person, once they've got your credentials, is going to use it. So, you know, it could be straight away, it could be down the track, it's always sitting there, you know.
Wow.
Like a ticking time bomb.
So how, I mean, this is probably an obvious question, but so how do businesses avoid all these, like, how do we get these alarm bells?
Yeah, I think if you start at really basic stuff, and I think that's where we like to start with most people, is that even with your email accounts, if, and going back to that example with the law firm up in Queensland, if they had two-factor authorization on the account, it would have limited it. So two-factor authorization is, and you know, if you use Gmail or Outlook or any of those sorts of things, basically when you log in, so she logged in and showed her email address and her password. If someone externally tried to then log into her computer, but she had two-factor, which is the extra step where they send an SMS to your phone,
yeah,
she would have been, someone's trying to log into your thing, oh well, warning sign, they couldn't do it without her, you know, access to her mobile. It would have stopped that whole attack. So I think that's fairly basic, but even just for the average person who we're speaking to today, if you, for your personal accounts and everything, wherever you have the option of having two-factor authorization on it, do it. Obviously the other thing, which doesn't sound, because most people, too many passwords, you hear that as a complaint all the time. Now I've got too many passwords, yeah. So look, a password manager for a business, if they can afford to do it, whether it's LastPass or something like that, where they, it manages the password for them and all their staff, or you know, long sentences or words that you can remember. You know, I like to wear a red hat when I go to the races, and changing some of the characters, like an I for, you know, a character letter or something like that, or an at symbol for an A, or different things like that, that you, you know, you'll sort of just break up that way. And making sure it's a different password for all your different areas. So don't use the same password you do for LinkedIn, for Facebook, for, you know, for your emails and everything, because, and this is what happens when LinkedIn got breached, people got all the information from LinkedIn, and then they can just start trying everyone else's, So they've got an email address and password that most people for business were using, and then going through and trying bank accounts and all that sort of stuff to see if they could crack with the same thing, because so many people use the same password. So
especially LinkedIn, it's a more professional network.
Yeah.
More professional business. So people are more likely to use more serious emails and more,
yeah, more correct, serious passwords. You know, and once they've got that, they can then try that same password to log into multiple things. Is this person a customer of Commonwealth Bank or Westpac? And they just sit there and they've got time, they've got, you know, it's not all manual they're doing it. These are automatically, you know, a lot of bots that they go use to actually go and just keep trying to crack into different systems to get in. So yeah, those two, and for a work situation too, probably the other thing we'd say is, if you've got a router, separate the router out for bring your own device, so don't have it on the same network, because there's really no need for a person's phone to be connected to the network at work, because, you know, you don't need to print off your phone or anything like that. But there was a situation last year where on the Android phone, they don't come with a torch, so they're on the Google Play Store, which isn't as regulated or tightly controlled as the Apple Store. Someone had loaded some malware on there, over a million downloads of this Torch app that went on there, but it was a bank harvesting, in the background, bank harvesting details. So people were taking their phone, bring their own device to work, connecting up to the network, and then that was bank harvesting all through the network to try and find people's banking details and stuff like that. It was a Torch app, yeah, for Google Play. So
wow,
over a million downloads within a fortnight, and people going to work, you know, putting their phone, connecting up to the network, and this is harvesting through trying to find banking details. So yeah, if you separate your router, which for an IT person or you, whoever looks after that for you, 5 minute job, maybe 10 minute job, but separating that out means that people can bring their own device, still connect up to Wi-Fi, which, you know, staff like to do, but they're not going to actually get that on the same network as everything else that you keep on there as well. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about acquiring customers, because the only reason why I ask is because not many people know too much about this space.
Yep.
So when you guys approach a business,
yep,
and you sort of have to educate them through, so yep, on and so on, What's the feedback like?
Well, to start this business, we went direct, obviously, straight up the bat. So because I'd had a bit of a financial background, I started, and because the Australian, if you have Australian financial services license in Australia, since 2015, you had to have these cyber things in place. It was an ASIC regulation. For the rest of Australia, it wasn't really until February 22nd this year that the mandatory breach notification laws came in, and that sort of has brought it a little bit more to the forefront. So when we were going direct, we tried, and probably burned a lot of money to be fair, like we were going direct out to people with AFSL license, and you'd get different things. People were like, ASIC are a toothless tiger, we don't need to worry about that, or, you know, it's too hard. But then there was ones who were listed or have boards, and it was either a tick box thing. So at least they're doing something, but it was more to tick a box rather than to actually go, we're really worried about cybersecurity, if that makes sense. But the byproduct of that is that they become more protected because they're doing it, you know. So going direct, we found that there was all varying reasons why. It just depended on the maturity of the business, whether they had spoken about it before. You know, a lot of businesses, as you just said, they're not aware of this cyber threat, and they're not sort of thinking about it as a business or continuity problem. The top ASX 100 businesses obviously had a push through for them. So they're, and you're talking about big banks that are constantly worried about these sorts of things and people at that end of town. But yeah, for the average business, it was interesting having conversations because if I had a dollar for every time someone said this in their business, my IT guy looks after that. Your IT guy doesn't, like, to be fair. They do the, as we said, you know, the antivirus, and they'll look after files and look after your computers, your network, all that sort of stuff. But the cybersecurity stuff and the stuff we're talking about here is not known. So this is bridging into the next part of the question is, what we found was, we're better going to MSPs or MSSPs, so managed service providers, people who look after all that stuff for the customer, and say, what are you guys doing at the moment? Do you get customers that ask you about this? And we sort of fell onto it by accident. It was part of what we were going to do, but one customer we had, which was an accounting firm, came to us and said, we want to use that product. His IT guy started getting the emails, like those templated emails. And he's going, where are you getting these emails from to do all this sort of stuff? And it's like, well, we're getting it from, these guys here, you know, DefendWise. So he's contacted me, I've seriously had, and he said, no joke, 20 or 22 people asking me for cybersecurity, what do I do, where do I go? You know, what's the key to this sort of thing? And so he contacted and said, yeah, I want to be a partner. So we started partnering with them because he's already got the contacts. He's already got the rapport built with them.
Yeah, it was the easiest point.
Trust everything. So he'd been working with this guy for 3 years. So he's a trusted advisor to them in that space. And it helps him because he's like, I didn't know what to say or where to go. And in the DefendWise framework, we concentrate on HOP, which is humans, operational, and policy. So it's the human element. How do you protect them? Operationally, what things do you need in place? And from a policy point of view, so if you did get a breach, what will you tell your customers? Like, you know, what you ask the customer or the business, if you did get a breach and they took all the data of your customers, and one of your customers rings you up the next day and says, what were you doing to protect my data? What would you say? And you just hear silence. They're like, I don't know, nothing. I'm probably not doing anything. And it's, you can see for the business owner, that's often the light switch that goes on from going, yeah, if it did happen, what would I say? Because I think, oh, it's not going to happen to me, that old chestnut. But when it does, and if it did, imagine the relationship and how long you've taken to grow your business if in one day all that went and you had to contact every one of your customers and say, your data's just been taken from us. So all the information we ever had on you, like whether it's Medicare numbers or all the information, personal tax file numbers, everything about you is all gone. We don't know where it's gone. We don't know when it could be used, but that's that reputational part going back to it that could be ruined for you. Now, how many customers are going to go, I'm not going to use you as an accountant anymore. You know, I trusted you, and I asked for your advice, and then this happens. You know, so that's the sort of shift we've done, is really to go more through. We're dealing with a large insurer here in Australia as well, who we allow the ability to white label our product. So that was the other thing. Jonathan said, the CEO, he'd been on the other side of the fence where he wanted to get people's products and just change them a little bit, or just put his branding on and sell it that way. But most of them are like, you can't do that. We need our name out there. We're not too precious about that. We just want to get it out to the masses, you know. So we're basically, like, for charities, we'll do it free for charity. So if you're a registered charity in Australia, we'll do free cybersecurity for you. So we're working with Giveit at the moment, and they've got a whole list of charities, so we'll do that sort of thing there. We want to get out to many people, and that's the hard part. So I think from doing that, we'll do a PR drive around that to get that through to charities, because they're always out there helping other people and they could be a target. So why not for us help them?
I think so. Yeah. They're constantly gathering full name, addresses, email, so on, sometimes even
and bank credit card accounts, details,
credit card directives, and so on.
Yeah, so we thought that that would be a way. So from us, and this try and give tips to other people, I think you really need to look at your business and say, for us, partnering makes sense. Because, you know, you're right, having the cyber security conversation in Australia at the moment is still, you're really educating, and I mean, there's not that many right people, although the whole market should be right. It, like you say, who's your customer? Every small business from, you know, 10 people up to,
because we haven't had anything that's really impacted us like the US. They had their social services hacked, Sequoia,
Equifax.
Equifax,
and you had even Facebook with the Analytica scandal that's happened. Ooh. And, you know, you've got, I mean, there's been lots over in the States, you know. Mm. So, yeah, it, and then it made it more personal for people too. But see, the States, we only just brought in this year, February 22nd, our laws. In Europe, they've just brought in GDPR on the 25th of this month, which is really big. So here in Australia, you get fined $2.1 million for a breach as a maximum fine, or 420K if you're a director or something like that. But you imagine, you think about that here from, imagine Australian bank, $2.1 million wouldn't even be loose change in someone's drawer, you know. So, however, in Europe, they've gone and they've done it, I'm pretty sure it's like 20 million euro, thereabouts as a minimum, or 4% of global turnover, whichever is greater. So that's a lot bigger carrot and stick, you know, to make people compliant. Yeah, so you would have seen, there's probably been a lot of emails, people, if you use a service at the moment, we've changed our policy details. You would have got
GDPR,
mate, we got hit with so many of those, So everyone's like that at the moment. Australia, it sort of just slipped under the radar. It just happened. No one's sort of really that aware of it. So our laws are better, but not as onerous as over there. But look, in America, they've been since the early 2000s, same with the UK, you know. So this awareness or these parts have been around a lot longer, but GDPR definitely takes up a level. And that's why I think Facebook were trying to get it all out of the way before these laws kicked in, because, you know, on the other side of the fence, if it happens, it's a lot of cash. So, you know, so that's the serious of it. But yeah, we are a long way behind. And we are really a nation of should be right, mate, sort of thing, or that won't happen to me. I think there's a bit of that, you know, sort of thing as well.
The world's changed. It's not what it used to be.
So connected, and everyone's just on devices all the time. And I mean, even shoulder surfing. I was on the train today, and I don't know how many people I saw sitting on the chairs on the train, and someone's looking over their shoulder. Now, what if they're getting their banking, doing their passwords, or logging into an account or something like that? They don't know who's standing behind their shoulder. You know, like, there's the awareness is just so low, and that's what we're trying to raise up, is the awareness of, in this situation, maybe just check this is happening, or don't do your banking in a fully open public space, or, you know, it's. I'm surprised at the amount of people and the information messages they open up and conversations they have on their phone about different things.
Yeah.
Like, should you really be talking about that in public? we've got a bit of work to do, but as I said, if we get enough people on board and the right sort of partners, then we can spread it a lot quicker, and that's the main aim.
What's been the greatest challenge building this business?
To keep it simple and to keep it in that layperson sort of thing. So both John and I, when we first started, we both sort of shook hands with each other. If any of us go too far down the rabbit hole, because once you get into cybersecurity, we started chasing these holes like, oh, this would be really good stuff. And it's like, it's going to make it too confusing. We need to bring it back. So how can we make it simple so it's easy to understand, but give impact as well? So that Pareto's principle, the 80-20 rule, we really went for that. So it was like, what's the most impactful things we can do? And a couple of tips we spoke about here, but also keeping it simplistic. So, and we've got people who are older generations who are using the program and getting it, you know. So, and that was our aim, is so someone who, and with low IT, you know, background or skill, just the average person who, you know, uses their computer almost like a typewriter, how can we keep it so simple that they'll actually get it and be able to implement it? And that's where we have to keep stripping it back and writing it and be impactful, but also you get the benefit, but it just had to be simple and easy to understand. And that's the hardest part, I think, from there. Secondary to that is obviously getting it out to as many people as you need to do, which is how many businesses have that problem. So, you know, it happens. But the awareness and look, even doing PR, it sort of sounds like you say, oh, you're doing it. But we didn't think about it until someone else approached us, because we'd actually started doing this already. And they're like, why don't you let people know about that sort of thing, you know? So we started talking to some PR people, and we'll probably do something on that front, because we'd like to cover as many charities as possible and help them out and get their staff aware. Because the thing is, if the staff are aware at work, they're more likely to be protected at home and in other environments as well. So
it's just, you're creating general awareness.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so we're not saying we're the, you know, we're covering everything, but the base that we cover at least gives a business somewhere to start, and then they can build upon that. So within the framework and for MSPs, there's sort of a marketplace in the background where they can suggest their products. So just like Unpasswords, they could have, you know, you could try LastPass or this one. So based on the size of the business and where they're at, you know, some of the people who are using our service are from the MSP side, like might be penetration testers, you know. So penetration testing is needed for a lot of businesses, but as they said to us when they white labeled our product, they said, we'd go out there and say, oh, you need to spend $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 on a penetration test. So you're taking someone from zero investment into cyber to go that far, it's a big leap.
Mm-hmm.
So with our product, they can sort of do it just say between $5,000 and $10,000 or somewhere around there, get this started. What that does is they self-assess and they can say, oh yeah, we've cleaned all this up. The next step is to go and maybe do a penetration test or get some other, you know, bits and pieces that we may need from there, because their awareness is up now. They can see what they've done, what they need to do.
Yeah.
And you're sort of stepping up into stuff as people grow, rather than just trying to go bang, go straight there. They've got something they can sort of build upon, almost like the framework, you know, or a good foundation they can actually build upon from there.
Awesome. A lot to absorb.
Yeah.
A lot to
and
learn.
I speak quickly too, don't I? We might have to slow this down. We play it back.
You're good. It's all good. Before we wrap things up, where can we find you guys online?
Okay, so defendwise.com is where you can go. That was our original page we used. As I said, you know, most times if we have partners, they're using it under their own brand, so it completely looks like there's no link back to us in any way, shape or form, and that's our model going forward. But yeah, defendwise.com is an easy one to get in and have a look at what we've got so far.
Awesome. There you go, guys. You need any cyber security tips, advice, help, defendwise.com.
Talk to this man.
Thank you very much.
All right, mate. Thank you.
It was an absolute pleasure.
You are listening to The Business Wilderness, the voice of entrepreneurs.